You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Khalid Saleem, I'm the Chief Digital Officer and Senior Vice President at TBC Corporation.
Khalid, thanks so much for finding time to be with us today on the Ivy Podcast. I know how busy you are, and we were just talking about you guys coming back from fully remote to the actual offices. So that must be quite a adaptation. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background, your professional experience, where you come from, and what falls under your purview within the current organization?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you, Ramjan. You know, I'm a technologist at heart. So, you know, go back almost 17, 18 years and started off as a developer, went to school for computer science. And that's why I call myself a technologist at heart, developer by nature. And then over the years, I've grown into the mold of a leader, partnering and collaborating with many folks over the last 18, 19 years of my career. Currently, at TBC, I'm the Chief Digital Officer and Senior Vice President responsible for digital transformation across all our digital properties, B2C and B2B, as well as what we call direct to consumer. So we have retail brands that we call that are owned by corporate itself, which is Tire Kingdom and NTB, that provide aftermarket services to vehicle owners. Then we have franchise brands under Midas and Big O Tires. And then on the flip side, on the B2B end, we have wholesale brands, which is TBC Brands and NTW. So it's a company that primarily runs business with tires and then aftermarket service industry and the aftermarket vehicle service industry. And the job here is to ensure that we support and facilitate the digital journey of our customers across all these footprints that we have.
Right, right. Well, that's exciting. And I got to ask, because we seem to have similar backgrounds, where I started out as, you know, the hands-on developer engineer, then progressed more into kind of the product roles, then project management, then to executive. From your standpoint, do you miss those days where you actually work, you know, creating something, and versus now, where I think we find ourselves a little bit more of a, you know, the coach mentor, where you focus more on others leading and making sure that people are on the right track? What's your take on that?
I'll tell you this, John. I mean, you know, absolutely. It's one of those things where you're like, you know what? Okay, if I could just build this piece, right? And you suddenly go into this more tactical, more operational mode many a times, because you're like, it could be done this way, right? Right. But as leaders, we have to understand that, you know, I definitely miss those days. And behind the scenes, when I'm not doing anything else, I read, I learn, and I try to play around behind the scenes myself, not at the workplace, not at the, as a hobby, if you were to call me. Right. I'm a developer by hobby too. Right. But as in essence, I mean, yes, you know, as a technologist who likes to build things, mm-hmm. you always have to keep yourself abreast of what is happening in the technology market. And I try to do that.
Right. Yeah, I find it one of the biggest challenges as I transition more into leadership roles is really taking that step back and not trying to, you know, take action yourself, because it's a, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction for you to fix something. And instead you got to focus on, you know, getting your, you know, the, your team members or the people that are on your groups, you know, formulate that right decision-making mindset and really help them from that standpoint.
So you're absolutely right, John. I think the key piece as leaders for us is, I'm a very strong believer that we have to have a team that basically truly believes in your vision, right? And then that team is a set of smart individuals that you have to trust them, mm-hmm. and give them the opportunity to go ahead and try and play around and then figure things out on their own and teach you how to do things, versus always providing them how it needs to be done. Because totally believe with what Steve Jobs used to say, when you hire smart people, You know, you don't tell them what to do. You basically hire smart people and listen to them what they tell you.
Right.
I'm a very strong believer of that dogma because I believe when you have smart team members on the team, don't try to tell them what to do. Listen to them, learn from them, and yes, guide them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Otherwise, what's the point, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If a single person could do everything, I mean, I always go back and say, if there is no team, there's no need for a leader.
Right.
So it's the reverse psychology that I apply. If there is a team, then you need a leader. If there was no team, guess what? You don't need a leader, right? Even entrepreneurs who have built big, big and huge organizations, even when they started off from scratch, eventually they had a rock star team that helped them deliver. Look at examples of Amazon. Look at examples of Microsoft. Look at examples of Apple. All of those, yes, they started off with one, two, or three individuals, but those were basically the initial team, and then it expanded to a team of key resources, key partners and collaborators who build the future.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you on that point. To take that a little bit further, as you know, the digital analytics thought leader and in your current type of role that you play within your organization, what kind of the analytics trends that you're currently observing or researching that and possibly looking to implement in your current environment in the future, what is the next big thing when it comes to digital analytics and what can potentially come out of the current times?
Sure. I think one of the key pieces in current times with analytics is, especially in today's digital world, is how could you be predictive about it? How could you employ predictive analytics to be able to lean in into what's happening in your you know, customer-facing channels or your internal channels, and how you can utilize that predictive intelligence to be able to either predict or forecast appropriately of what's going to happen. That will help you run the business more focusedly and more, profitably, if you were to put it this way. Or worst case scenario, if let's assume it is not profitable, one thing at a minimum you'll get out of it is customer satisfaction will go through the roof. So that predictive intelligence piece is key. And how do you look at the data and lean in and identify how we can predict the trends better? There is machine learning that comes into play, right? Whether you want to play in the supervised learning modes, unsupervised learning modes for those machine learning models, or Q learning models, right? Which mode you want to go towards to be able to leverage and create this predictive model that can help you forecast better of what will happen in the future from in terms of customer journey or in terms of customer buying patterns or in terms of what's happening with the weather that may influence someone's decision.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, predictive analytics is something that, as an example, especially in healthcare, actionable, you know, analytics that allow you to predict certain behaviors, especially when you're treating patients and those things, I think those become of utmost importance. So I'm very excited about those trends as well that you're talking about.
Great.
You briefly touched upon machine learning and, you know, artificial intelligence. And if we talk about advanced technology in general, you know, the RPA and AI, those are the buzzwords these days, but they've been around for quite some time. It's not anything that's new out of this world, but they're reinventing technology, analytics, software engineering as a whole. How do you think these particular advanced technology trends will impact your industry that you currently operate? And more importantly, I'm curious, what are your recommendations when it comes to, adoption of such technologies? Because everyone is talking about it, but implementing and leveraging that is a different story.
I think, that's a great question, John. I mean, I think one thing I would mention is in today's world, especially with COVID coming into play, I see supply chain as the new technology of the world, by the way. Right. And the reason why I say that is because how quickly you can get a product to a customer or an end consumer is going to be the key more and more as we go forward. Because people, this pandemic lasting this long has changed the perception of how customers shop, for anything, by the way. It's not nothing specific to clothing or specific to shoes, specific to cars, anything that they shop for, it has changed the perception of how it was done before. So supply chain becomes key, and machine learning plays a huge role in that, right? In today's world, you would see there are many industries that are applying or leveraging machine learning very well. For example, automotive space, they're doing great stuff in self-driven cars, leveraging artificial intelligence and machine learning to be able to predict what is the next move for the vehicle. Some great, phenomenal success that has been achieved so far in that space. You know, there is work being done in terms of tracking things, in terms of, you know, predicting or providing customer recommendations on products, right, based off of what's happening. There's work being done of recommending based off of customer's affinity, certain things based off of whichever platform you're on. But in the supply chain space, I think the key piece is as more and more people become used to shopping online and rely less and less from a shopping perspective in the retail sector, this supply chain piece becomes even more important. What you will need to start looking into then is what are the most appropriate routes that you can handle? What is the best possible way to get the product the fastest to a customer in the least amount of cost, right? Because those routing algorithms will require many things. What is the traffic pattern for the day? What is the weather like? What time of the day you are traveling? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, what is the amount of weight that you can carry in that vehicle? All those pieces come into play when you're attempting to deliver a single parcel, by the way. So when you have multiple things on a truck or in a vehicle, machine learning will help you identify the most optimal route or the most optimal path to do it. In supply chain world, with companies who have multiple distribution centers, Amazon actually does that today. They may have a cross-dock model where one DC, they bring product from, deliver it to another DC, and that DC's truck basically takes it to the last mile and delivers through the last mile, right? Or it takes it from one DC, delivers to, let's say, USPS post office, and USPS does the last mile delivery. Vice versa, there are third-party providers who have products in their DCs. They bring it to Amazon's DC and they deliver it the last mile. So supply chain and machine learning, in my opinion, have the biggest potential in this decade. In this 2020 to 2030, I strongly believe if anyone wants to capture this market, if they do a great job in the supply chain piece, they will take the greatest share possible. There are companies who are already doing that, XPO Logistics. They are doing some very good and decent work in that space. And then Amazon, we already know they are doing that. And of course, as a company, we also are looking into opportunities and options in that space.
Right. I love that. And it's a great segue into the next topic I want to talk to you about, which I'm very passionate about, is innovation. And more specifically around some strategies for building and fostering that culture innovation, because everything that you just talked about is probably going to be very difficult to implement and cultivate without that culture of innovation. So from your standpoint, what has worked well for you? Or maybe the other way, what were some of the lessons learned through your professional journey that you found useful when it comes to building and fostering a culture of innovation? Can you talk a little bit more around that?
Yes, absolutely. I think I always go back and say, for innovation, nothing has to be created on a grandiose scale. Start small, think incremental, and then build on those things. I have always shared with my team and in my career that I've gone through is start building something small, test it with the customer, test it with small subset of your customer. Quickly do an A/B test in the digital space or even in the non-digital space. You can do that. Learn from what the customer perception is, what the customer journey is like, or what the optimal behaviors are, and then expand further versus going big bang approach where asking for a lot of dollars and then trying to solve every single problem in one single shot, right? It should not be that way. It should be all incremental, because in the customer mind, unfortunately, like it or not, in today's world, our attention spans are 3, 5, maybe 10 seconds are at best. You can blame it on these devices that we carry every day. Unfortunately, that's the reality. So we have to understand that the customer mindset is also looking for these incremental changes versus big bang. So how do we build capabilities that are incremental in nature that provide you innovative capabilities incrementally, right? So that's the key piece that I have always very strongly believed in. Build technology solutions that can be basically providing you simple, set of innovative capabilities that can be expanded upon if customers have an affinity towards it. And in many cases, trial and error is the key, right? You know, you will fail in many things and you will learn a lot of things, right? So if you go incremental, it's easy to pivot into a different direction. If you go big bang, the problem is there's no alternate because you have spent so much energy into it. There's no looking back, nothing else you could do. If you're going incremental, you will learn along the way and you can quickly pivot to the direction where the customer sentiment is going or technology is moving towards, because technology is moving so fast these days. You are building something in the next 6 months, and if you don't deliver, somebody else delivers, then guess what? They have the competitive advantage, right? So building incrementally, getting customer feedback quickly is the key. And that's how I have always believed in building innovative solutions in an incremental manner. Agile fashion is the way I always present to the stakeholders to say, you have to build these solutions in an agile fashion. Build them out, test them out, share with the customers, gain feedback, get customer feedback, and then gain feedback from the stakeholders, and then incrementally improve or iterate upon those. Because many times we may think we have gotten every customer's potential scenarios that they may be running into or potential issues that they may be having until we launch it, right? And guess what? We learn, by the way, whatever we built, even though the customer said that was their issue, it's either no longer their issue or they want it a different way. So incrementality is the key, and I am a strong believer. Now, there are certain scenarios where you will be innovating a product from soup to nuts, and then you will be testing it, right? So there are still ways that, you know, as keep having an entrepreneurial mindset, even in a corporate culture, is important. That's why I go back and say, you know, I'm a strong believer in doing these incremental changes, requesting for dollars that can help build these things incrementally out, so that let's assume something were not to work out, you can easily pivot away or say, you know what, there's no point spending any additional dollars on it versus spending millions of dollars and learning that, guess what, it did not work out and that entire millions and millions of dollars are now down the drain.
Right, absolutely. I love what you're talking about as far as incremental approach, you know, iterating, MVP and really focusing, you know, really creating that loop for feedback. Mm-hmm. I think it's of utmost importance. I love, there's one of the books that I really enjoy by one of my former Harvard professors, Stephen Tonkey. He's the author mm-hmm. of the book, Experimentation Matters and Experimentation Works. And he really talks a lot about some, you know, very similar concepts that you just covered. Building that culture of experimentation where the small experiments that, yes, it is expected that some will fail, some will succeed, but actually, you know, creating that environment where people feel empowered, people feel, you know, safe, people feel, you know, empowered at the end of the day to take on these experiments and see what works, see what doesn't, you know, get the customer feedback, stakeholder feedback. I think it's very important. So thank you for those examples.
Absolutely, John. And to add on to it, as leaders, it's our responsibility, it's our duty to ensure that we provide our team the tools, the capabilities that help them grow, right? And help them understand that, guys, it is okay that if one of your pieces that you're building or one of the things that you are innovating upon fails, it is okay. Because if you don't fail, guess what? We did not learn anything. We are just iterating or we are playing safe.
Right.
In today's world, playing safe does not get you any returns these days, by the way. Let's be honest. You have many examples in front of us. There's so many organizations who were sitting on billions and billions of dollars. And when they played safe, guess where they are versus people who had basically less than $1 million in their coffers, and now they were taking incremental risks and see where they are, mm-hmm. right? And it's a prime example of how you can incrementally grow value for customers, continue to take risks. I mean, I'll go back and say some companies around local companies outside in Florida, there's a company called Peak Activity, right? I know folks out there and they're really smart people, right? And they built something from scratch. And they, if you talk to them, you will see that they have built these things incrementally. Mm-hmm. Learn from the customers, learn from people who are not even their customers, understood what their problem is and starting to build their platforms, right? Same goes with, look at Chewy and look at their progression, where they have been, right? They may not be profitable yet, but laser focus on the customer is the key. And while they are being laser focused, behind the scene, they are testing out, experimenting out. Some things fail, some things work. So the mindset, the culture that we have to cultivate as leaders is it's okay to fail. Mm-hmm. But the key piece is what we learn out of it and what learning is it that we take forward and employ to deliver the best and fast experience.
Right, right. Absolutely. I love that. I love those recommendations. So obviously a lot of that would be impossible without the right people around you. Mm-hmm. I would like to take a moment to talk a little bit about hiring and, you know, attracting the top talent for the teams that you're trying to build these innovative cultures around. From your standpoint, kind of what has worked well for you or maybe has not when it comes to deploying strategies to attract the top talent to your teams?
I think one of the key pieces that, you know, every leader should look at before I get into what I have done is ensuring what works best for their organization, because every organization has a different culture. That's one piece. And then two, they have different needs, right? However, where there are a lot of similarities is when you are looking at where you want to go towards. Nobody joins an organization with a view that I will have a pessimistic view of the business and I'm there to just collect a paycheck. Nobody does that. Everybody is looking at, you know what, one, I want to transform. I want to be a part of a change. I want to be a culture maker or culture influencer, right? So as leaders, this is our responsibility to go ahead and start thinking about a couple of things. One, when you are looking at talent, right, look at individuals who are passionate, okay? You can train someone to be, you know, good at what needs to be done, but you cannot inculcate passion. Mm-hmm. Passion is only something that comes from within, right? So look for individuals who are passionate and who are hungry, who want to make a difference, whether it's difference for themselves, whether it is difference for, you know, the company that that you are running, or difference in the business that you are in, right? So that's one piece. The other piece that when I look at when we are looking at hiring or, you know, partnering with folks is, you know, the talent that they have, right? What they have done in the past is great, absolutely great. But the opportunity that they are willing to take or willing to risk for, you know, achieving their goal is the key, right? How hungry they may be. And when I say the hunger, it's all about satisfying our technological, you know, thirst, or satiating that thirst that we may have, or, you know, influencing what customers may be thinking and how we can influence that customer trajectory, right? So the mindset that I always look for is one, passion, the other two is the hunger for making a difference. If you can influence a person that you are hiring to do certain things in a certain format from a process standpoint, you know, you can, you know, get them going in the direction that you want it to be, but you cannot influence a person that you're hiring to be passionate, and you cannot influence a person that you're hiring to be hungry towards what they are doing. That only comes from within. So passion and hunger is one thing that I look at. And when I say hunger, it's basically the appetite to make a difference, right? And passion is whatever they are trying to do, they want to, they are so excited and enthusiastic about it that they truly believe that they are part of a journey that can make a transformation. And that transformation may not necessarily be earth-shattering, but it is maybe making a difference for their clients, making a difference for their customers. And companies have been very successful in the past who have focused on their customers, focusing on their needs, that whether it's earth-shattering or not, but focusing on their needs, and they have had always passionate individuals.
One thing that you said that really stood out is, yes, the past experience matters, but more importantly is, what is that individual really wants to do next? What are they really passionate about? I think that's, you know, that's a great point that oftentimes it's overlooked. People who hire focus too much on the resume, on their past past accomplishments and, you know, the things that they have done, you know, before this. But more importantly, you know, it's important to look at what do you want to do? What are you really passionate about? Like you were talking about. So I love that advice. And to take that a little bit further, when you interview candidates, and can you tell us a little bit more about what does the interview with Khaled looks like? What do you look for in some of the responses? And let's say you have an interview with a candidate tomorrow. Do you keep it pretty traditional or do you get creative with your interviews? Tell us, give us a little glimpse.
So if you would have asked me this question, John, about, let's say, 10 years ago, my answer would have been it's very, you know, textbook. Right. And I would go with certain things in my mind and ask them and come out. Right. But over the years, as I've grown and I've had the, you know, the privilege to be able to learn from some great leaders, I have changed my perception and I've completely changed the way I look at people. And the one thing I would do essentially is definitely ask the individual who would be, let's say, coming in for a specific role, is what is the opportunity that they see in our business? If you truly want a job, right, in a company, what is the opportunity that you are seeing in our business? So it helps me understand the homework that you have done. And that homework that that person has done helps me understand their passion levels. So it goes back to what I was referring to before. Then second piece I would look into is, you know, and not following a textbook approach, is have them share with me scenarios where they have dealt with situations that were completely uncomfortable to them. And the goal of that is not to, you know, gain an understanding of how well they performed. The goal is to understand and be aware that they are okay being vulnerable. Especially when we are hiring for leaders, we have to understand that we have to hire people that are okay being vulnerable. Because if we are not okay being vulnerable, we are not open to criticism and we are not open to ideas. So those are the two things I totally look for in individuals that we are hiring on my team. Specifically, if I'm interviewing, I look for those, because if I can gain one piece is how passionate you are about the position you're about to get into, great. Perfect. So fits my bill that I spoke about earlier. And then two, if I can learn from you that you are okay being criticized or you're okay taking, you know, some feedback, whether it's constructive or not, you're okay taking feedback with an open heart and saying, let me think about that. Because as leaders, if we cannot do that, it will always be, I said so, which is wrong, which is absolutely wrong. We need to be, all of us as leaders have to be servant leaders. So if I'm hiring for a leadership role, I always look at, is this person going to be able to act as a servant leader and help inspire his or her team to get to the next level?
Right.
Those are the two key pieces that I look at when I'm doing an interview.
That's great. And there you go for any candidates who are listening right now. We're about to interview with Khaled. You have some intel on what to expect when you're going to interview with him. No, but all jokes aside, I love those recommendations because it resonates. I recently interviewed CEO, chairman of Deloitte Consulting, and he said something very similar to what you were talking about, is picking up on some of these flavors of arrogance almost in the candidates' responses, where they mostly focused on their personal, experiences and personal, almost like benefits that they're trying to get out of this particular opportunity versus, you know, contributing as a team or becoming a part of the organization and group and growing from there. I think those are very, you know, very interesting points that you're making. Khalid, last but not least, tell us, what are you currently reading and what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
Sure. Absolutely. So currently I'm reading The Future is Faster Than You Think. It's by Peter Diamandis, a wonderful book. And it kind of sort of touches upon our, you know, characteristics that inhibit, you know, things that we should be actually doing. In fact, it basically kind of sort of hold us back from doing it versus focusing on what we should be aiming for. And then be prepared for this experimentation piece, how quickly you can experiment and think about what is out there. Be prepared for it, right? So, and be open to taking risk. And it's great. It's a great book. I highly recommend reading it because, you know, it talks about capabilities or business cases and scenarios, what, you know, other companies have come across and how they tackle them. And it helps you correlate what you would do in those situations, right? So a great book I suggest. And it basically is, it's a striking balance between innovation and sustainable business models. So definitely worth reading, especially for people who are trying to innovate in this space. The book that I highly recommend, you know, if you would have asked me this question 5-6 years ago, I probably would have given you a different answer. But a year and a half ago, I, you know, went through Satya Nadella's book, Hit Refresh. And I will tell you, it inspired me from, you know, from a completely different standpoint. In the sense, the journey of the individual himself, journey of Satya himself, but on top of that, how he transformed a behemoth, which was a great company at some point in time, and which was kind of going downhill, if you were to put it that way, for a certain period of time, right, and then transformed completely into a company which is, again, one of the leading software providers in the world. And, you know, what he did was he went back to what we were talking about as leaders. We need to start acting as servant leaders. Listen to our teams. Listening to the high performance guys or girls who basically are on a daily basis performing so many things in a great capacity. And they are doing things in the most efficient manner and listening to them and applying their learnings across the organization. And he did that across the board. If you read his book, you will look at many examples where he talks about certain organizations who did one thing great, right? And other organizations who were basically just, you know, doing grunt work, right? And how he, you know, coalesced and then basically had leaders partner together to say, you know what, we are in this together. Changing the culture at the leadership level, you know, company, something which is, you know, which is very close to my heart, adopting open source. Microsoft going in the open source space was considered a big boo-boo, right? It was considered a big no-no. And 2.5 years ago, I was on a call with Microsoft, the gentleman who was on the call, he says, yeah, we can run SQL and Linux. And I'm like, wait, what? Seriously, you're joking? He's like, yes, now we do that. So that culture shift, it's a pivotal cultural transformation of bringing openness into the workspace, learning from people who do things the best, and then sharing the insights of people who may have failed on certain things, but guess what? They're not failures. They have learned something which is huge. So experimentation, constant experimentation, and then learning from those failures is also a sharing opportunity for the entire organization.
Right.
So those are the key concepts that I had read in that book. And I have taken that book very close to my heart. And, you know, I was I used to follow Microsoft, but I was never a fan, right?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, I have become a Satya Nadella's fan for sure after that book. And then, of course, Microsoft, the culture shift that they have done. So him and, you know, Sundar Pichai, who's the CEO of Google, are the two folks that I basically follow and see what they do as leaders. And they are prime examples of what a servant leader should be. Collaborate, partner with leaders at the peer level, but more importantly, you know, listen to your team. Listen to the ideas that are being sent to you by your team and then react appropriately to them.
I love these recommendations. Definitely going to add it to my growing list of the new books that I want to read. Definitely appreciate the introduction, I mean, the recommendation. And for all our listeners, we'll make the title and authors of these books available in episode notes. Khaled, Ken, thank you enough for your time and lent expertise to us today. I learned quite a bit myself. I actually very excited about conversations like this, which I'm sure we can keep going and on. And something you've mentioned a couple of times in your responses, that if you were to ask me that 10 years ago or 5 years ago, well, guess what? I would love to do another episode in a couple of years down the road so that we can see how much had transpired. So I'm definitely excited about that. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure, John. Thank you very much for your time. It was a wonderful chat. And, you know, I would look forward to, you know, talking more in the future, listening more to your podcast. And at any point in time, if any of your listeners would like to reach out to me, I can be easily reached out to on LinkedIn.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.